The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in, students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman, and joined by my co-hosts today, Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. This is the last weekend without college football, guys, until January 27th of next year. So we are definitely ramping up into college football regular season and the first year of the 12-team playoff. The AP poll released on Monday. You had the SEC on ABC theme song release on Monday, too. I mean, everything's coming out at one time. Any thoughts on the SEC on ABC theme song?
Come on now. That's the best we can do. The first year of this SEC on ABC, and this is the best thing we could do. Look, if you've listened to it, you understand what I'm saying. We're going from the SEC on CBS, which is an iconic theme. As much as I didn't like some of the broadcasters on CBS, didn't like the game time on CBS, didn't like how the games took 8 hours on CBS, at least they had this iconic theme that they stuck with that was classic but nostalgic at the same time and cool for college football and for the SEC. I don't know where the ABC is going with this, and the only thing I'm looking forward to is the night games. That's the only thing I can look forward to for this SEC on ABC. Other than that, major thumbs down from me.
Yeah, it's like a B tier theme song. It's okay, it's not great, it's not good. But we were spoiled with SEC on CBS for a while, so it's kind of hard to go from that to listening to a very mediocre entrance. And I think it's just going to take a while to get used to as well. I don't think it'll ever be as great as SEC on CBS, but I think after a little bit, we might think, okay, that's good. I think you look at SEC on CBS, there's a lot of historic moments and games behind that. So you kind of tie it in, and there's so much nostalgia behind that one theme where you just automatically go, oh, okay, this is SEC football. I mean, this is like the biggest games we've ever seen in our lifetime. And now you have this new theme and just like, wow, this is just awful. I don't want to listen to this. But I'm going to be optimistic about it. I'm going to give it a chance, and I'm going to let the moments happen, and we'll see. But as far as Gray said about night games, a lot more night games. I mean, prime time SEC football matchups. That's something to look forward to, because I think 2:30 was a good start time. But like it took 8 hours. I mean, when you're done, and I think we can go back a few years ago, four overtime Iron Bowl. I mean, we got there at 2:30. Well, we were not out of there by like midnight. I mean, it's a long time to have a game. And I think you say that for all TV now. I mean, the amount of commercial breaks they have, but like SEC on CBS, that was different. But there's good with the bad. And I think that you can say the same thing for ABC at this point, but we'll see.
Flipping over to the AP poll that was released on Monday, Alabama's ranked 5th, Auburn's unranked, and there's no group of 5 teams ranked in this poll at all. But what do y'all think about the AP not giving any group of 5 team any recognition here in the top 25 when one of them is going to have to make the college football playoff?
It's true. That's true. I didn't think about it from that perspective, but also the AP poll is something that is becoming more and more and more irrelevant by the days and the years that come by. I don't think many people should take AP polls or any media vote polls seriously in general, especially in the preseason, and especially for something like college football, college basketball, stuff like that, when there really college is basketball. Just no way to predict and know what you're going to get until we see these guys on the field. We've seen only some of these people have even seen some of these guys on the field for a week in practice against their own team. You know, we understand what we're seeing and what we've got coming back. I did have one team where I had a major issue with them actually being ranked at all in this is Texas A&M. They had Texas A&M at number 20. I just don't get that at all. This is a team coming off of a firing of their head coach, and they lost every single recruit, and all their five stars from their previous classes escaped and went elsewhere because of the horrible culture that Jimbo Fisher had in that program. They hired Mike Elko from Duke, who was a solid coach at Duke, but is this a guy that's going to translate over to the SEC and be able to play Texas A&M football, the type of physical football we've come to expect from Texas A&M over the past few years? No, absolutely not. They missed on so many different transfer portal options, especially at the playmaker positions. I know Connor Wegman is back. That is not a guy who has impressed me over his Texas A&M career. Don't like that one at all. But again, it's very irrelevant. These are media people voting on this. It means absolutely nothing. I just think it's a fun thing to argue back and forth of.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. I'd echo that. But if you were going to like break down the AP poll and say, let's put a group of five team in there, I'd say you'll get Memphis. I think Memphis has a good opportunity to say, hey, we're one of the best group of five teams. I mean, we need to be up there ranked. I think you got like Boise State up there as well. So you can kind of go down the list and say, hey, maybe these guys should have been ranked. But as of right now, it's relevant. I mean, you have teams like Miami ranked who haven't proven anything in the past 10 years. And all they do is disappoint you. You have a Michigan team who has a new head coach. Alabama has a new head coach. I mean, you can go down the list of a number of problems with some of these teams and say, how are they ranked so high? How are they even ranked in the top 25? Oh, it doesn't matter. Number one and number two, I mean, we'll find everything out once we play our first games and actually get into the schedule. Cause right now, I mean, we have not even seen an actual game yet. We still got what, 21 days, actually probably a little less than that.
Next weekend.
Yeah. Week zero games are next weekend. That's crazy thing. But yeah, I mean, irrelevant. Why are we even talking about the AP poll anymore? It's trash.
What about the college football AP or the college basketball one, Nathan?
You know, me and Gray have been, we've been through this 1,000 times. I mean, we can go back to the year Auburn took forever to be ranked number one. The numerous times where Alabama was just crapped on in the ranking after winning a big, I'm not going to get into it. It's an irrelevant poll. Media members voting on where teams should be. They're irrelevant. People just like to stir the pot. And that's exactly what happens. And you know, now we're here talking about it. Thank you, Alex. This is just like what they want us to do.
Well, by the end of the show, the pot's definitely going to be stirred with what we're going to talk about with that list that Chris Doering went through.
Oh, Chris Doering's a clown, so.
But let's start off with the singer Pitbull purchasing the naming rights to Florida International's football stadium for $1.2 million per year over a five-year period. Was this a smart move by FIU and Pitbull?
I don't know. You don't see this a lot. This is a first thing. You know, this is very rare. This was, I had to read it twice when it first came out. I was like, wait, what?
Who did what now?
Why? I don't understand. But I think you see it from both sides. I think from the Florida International perspective, it's, oh my gosh, we're going to get $1.2 million over the next 5 years. That's not just going to help out, you know, the university and just stuff in general, but that's going to help us, you know, kind of level the talent in terms of NIL and the competition and be able to compete with recruits, especially in that state where there is a ton of NIL money in that state coming from different schools, whether it be Florida, Florida State, Miami, UCF. I mean, that is a tough place to compete for recruits. I think that's the FIU side of it, is the money side. From the Pitbull side, I don't really get it, but it's also, I think it's a marketing tool. I think it's a massive advertising tool. And then he also gets a 20,000 seat arena or stadium to fill, you know, what, 10 times a year. He gets 12 times a year. He gets it to fill in for concerts. It's a chance to book, you know, concert dates super far in advance. You know, have these where you can establish a fan base in terms of music in a certain area, and that area is very Pitbull music type of place. So it'll be interesting. I wonder if we'll see more artists do this with these group of five schools that need this kind of money from these artists. I wonder if we do see that more come up with different artists in different schools.
Yeah, like I thought it was very beneficial for both sides in this scenario. You talked about the NIL portion for FIU. I mean, I think at the time, it's just weird for us to see this happening. This is like very firsthand experience to say, oh my gosh, this is exactly what happens with the NFL and the NBA to have companies take over stadiums and have them named after them. But we're talking about a music artist here, which is kind of crazy to think. But yeah, it will help FIU out with their NIL, with their recruiting, trying to compete within the state. I mean, we can go down the whole entire list. I mean, there are schools that even you didn't bring up, Gray, that were that will compete with FIU in that scenario for recruiting inside the state. And then for Pitbull having the access to the stadium to have these concerts. I mean, it's a big venue. And I think immediately it's like it doesn't make sense because I don't even know how old Pitbull is at this point. I mean, it's crazy. I was listening to his music decade ago. and now it's like I don't even know any of his new songs, but I think it's definitely a marketing tool. I mean, you don't immediately think about Pitbull, and then you see this happen, and it's first time happening, and now we're out here talking about it. So it's obviously working pretty well. And as far as like going forth and seeing other artists do it, I think it will be beneficial. I mean, it moves the game of college football forward and helps out these schools who don't have the access to the resources like these other big schools do. It gives them a chance to really battle out in recruiting and pick up some guys that they might normally get. And then, you know, on the other side, on the flip side, you look at artists or whoever decides to rent out the stadium or help out with the NIL. It gives them a chance to boost their marketing campaign and makes both sides a lot of money. So I think it's very beneficial at the end of the day for both sides to do this. It's just strange to begin with.
Yeah.
I think the business managers and the marketing managers for both sides need a huge raise because like Nathan kind of touched on, when's the last time we really sat down and talked about Pitbull?
Exactly.
Our childhoods. I mean, that's the last time he really released music we listen to nowadays. And we're still listening to some of the stuff he released back in the 2010s and the 2000s. And then FIU. When's the last time we talked about FIU in any sort of our imagination? Never. I don't think we've ever talked about FIU football. So for them to get themselves and Pitbull in the news and in a good light, not having bad negative press on this is good press for each side. So I think these marketing and business managers deserve a lot of credit for what they put together for both these sides. Because like both y'all touched on, it's a great thing. Both sides benefit the school when it comes to getting money and publicity, the Pitbull side publicity and getting a free stadium basic and at $1.2 million worth. But you get 10 days per year to use it and you get to put your vodka in there and all types of things. So it really benefits both sides. And it'll probably be in smaller schools here within the next year at the soonest. I think we'll probably be seeing a school within the next week probably follow suit here and try to get an artist, whether it be, I don't know, a country artist for a Southern team like an Alabama, like a Troy or something like that gets a sponsorship. So this is on the horizon. And this isn't only the first thing that's going to happen. I mean, we're going to have field sponsorships. That's around the corner. We'll have jersey patches. So this is only the first thing towards more sponsorships and more acquisition money-wise for these schools going forward.
I think the fact that Pitbull did it first, and just like you said, Alex, when was the last time we talked about Pitbull? I mean, it's been at least 10 years, probably more like 15. And the fact that he's all over the news now, we're sitting here talking about him, and you know, FIU's gotten so that's going to attract those artists that maybe just like Pitbull, who are super popular a period of time in the past. Like, oh, I mean, we could do that. We could afford that. What about this school? Let's do it. You know, that it's coming. There's going to be a lot more of this.
Now getting into a more not good topic for a certain fan base to talk about. Former Michigan head coach and current Los Angeles Chargers head coach Jim Harbaugh has been suspended for a year and given a 4-year show cause penalty by the NCAA for recruiting violations. And these are not related to the Connor Stallion scouting scandal. that Harbaugh got suspended for the three games at the end of Michigan's regular season. Rather, they are related to the three-game suspension Harbaugh served at the beginning of it for an investigation into recruiting violations during the COVID-19 dead recruiting period. And that was the kind of the cheeseburger story where he bought a cheeseburger for a recruit. That's where this suspension is coming from for Jim Harbaugh. Yeah, guys, what are your thoughts on the NCAA waiting till Harbaugh gets out of the NCAA coaching to give him this penalty, where Harbaugh probably is not coming back to college football ever again? So this is kind of just like a showing, buffing up to everybody, saying this is what we're going to do. But it's kind of like an empty threat at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, even before Jim Harbaugh took the job at Michigan, when he was in the pros, I always thought he was a pro coach. I don't think never thought he was a perfect college coach, or he's definitely meant to be in college, even at a school like Michigan, where you've got all the resources and all the, you know, you get all the talent, you've got the schedule and all that. I don't think he belonged in college. I think he belonged in the NFL. And I think he's going there and he's staying there at the Chargers. You know, he could go in and completely change their situation, even though it will be tough because they're in an interesting spot talent wise. But I think that's what he wants. So, no, I don't think he's coming back to the NCAA at all. But why is the NCAA doing this right now? Why is it? It doesn't make any sense to me from the NCAA. But then again, when I say that, when I look back on that, I can't remember the last thing that has made sense from the NCAA in general. So
giving back Reggie Bush's Heisman Trophy.
Yeah.
That's like the last thing.
That's the last thing though. It was like, oh, okay, good. Yeah. this is weird. It's not like he's still the coach there. That would be the major punishment. And this would be huge if that were the case. If Jim Harbaugh did not decide to take that Chargers job and he was still the head coach of Michigan, this would be huge. This would be groundbreaking. But it's not. And it's really like, okay, he's not going to be back in the NCAA. He's not going to work for you ever again. I don't understand why you're suspending.
Ooh, so scary.
Yeah, this is a huge joke entirely. Well, I mean, the NCAA has been a joke for some time now, let's be honest. But the fact that they wait till after Harbaugh leaves and pretty much indict him on this and really just punish him, I don't know if it's like a threat to other coaches who do the same thing or if it's just trying to scare him from coming back. He wasn't going to come back in the first place. He has his NFL job. I mean, let's say he doesn't have success there. Let's just say he even wants to lead the NFL. I'm sure another team out there will hire him. You go based off of the number of other head coaches that have been hired at different teams after failing at the original spot. So let's just say Jim Harbaugh ever comes back. I was going to mention that now, but you know, you had to bring it up anyway. Yeah, this is just a huge joke. The NCAA is a huge joke. I don't understand what they're trying to do at this point. They had no direction. I mean, I think we were talking about this last year around the same time about how much of a joke they were, and they just continued to build on that. So, I mean, go ahead and get down to the local NCAA comedy club and have a few laughs, because all they tell is some terrible jokes.
So the NCAA said that Harbaugh had been accused of being uncooperative in their investigation and said he denied meeting with two recruits despite proof saying he did and showing he did. And then before this was even announced, the Tuesday prior, he came out and his quote was, "Never lie, never cheat, never steal. I was raised with that lesson." That was part of his spiel he had. So never lie, never cheat, never steal, but lies to the NCAA. And we're looking towards possibly cheating.
He's so a perfect coach for the Los Angeles Chargers. I'm telling you.
And Michigan is not distancing themselves from him either, because he's coming back to be their honorary captain for their home opener against Fresno State. So you think they would want to be like distancing themselves from somebody who is suspended by the NCAA, but they're like, screw the NCAA. And come on, Jim Harbaugh. I don't blame him though, because screw the NCAA. In general.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with Michigan on that. That's the one thing that, you know, with all the cheating, with all the crap that staff has done and he's done, they won the national championship last year. He needs to come back. He needs to be allowed back in Michigan.
I don't know. The NCAA really wants to make a stand. You go ahead and take away Michigan's national championship from last year and go ahead and tell. That's
definitely true.
You know, yeah, y'all cheated. Yeah. That's what y'all get. And I'm sure there'd be a huge outcry. It'd be almost like Reggie Bush situation all over again, but not quite on the same level.
It'd be worse.
That would be taking away national championship. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that would be worse. Because it's a single player. This is a whole entire team and fan base.
Yeah. Who cares about Michigan? I hate Michigan fans.
Well, staying on the topic here, new Michigan head coach Sherrone Moore is one of seven members from the 2023 football program accused of violating NCAA rules in a draft of the NCAA's notice of allegations obtained by ESPN. The draft, which could be subject to change, states Moore could face a show cause penalty and possible suspension for allegedly deleting a thread of 52 text messages with former Michigan staffer Connor Stallions in October of 2023, which is on the same day that media reports revealed that Stallions was leading an effort to capture the play calling signals of future opponents. The draft states that the texts were later recovered and Moore subsequently produced them to law enforcement staff. Moore is accused of committing a level two violation, according to the draft. And in that same draft, it was also confirmed that Connor Stallions was that guy on the Central Michigan sideline in the Michigan State game earlier in the season in 2023. So there's a lot of stuff coming out of Michigan. What do you think the punishment's going to be for somebody like Sherrone Moore?
I think it should be very similar to the punishment that they just gave Jim Harbaugh. This Michigan staff, this 2023 Michigan staff is going to go down as one of the wildest and sketchiest of them all, especially of ones to win a national championship. Because this is crazy. I mean, when all the stuff with Connor Stallions originally came out, and it was like, okay, Michigan just needs to be done for the year. Like, that's what people were calling for at that point, for the NCAA to do. They need a bowl ban this year. They do not need to be. Why are they playing football? That's ridiculous. So that doesn't happen. Then they go win the national championship. And now more stuff is coming out about Jim Harbaugh, about now their head coach, Sherrone Moore. I don't know. Michigan's in for a rude awakening when it comes to the NCAA. Again, just like Nathan said a little bit ago, the NCAA wants to make a statement and prove that they are still the big bad NCAA that everybody still, you know, doesn't believe that they are anymore. Take away that trophy. See what happens then.
I don't know. Sherrone Moore is basically the Hillary Clinton of college football, deleting text messages. Basically, might as well be emails at this point. To have the involvement that he had with Connor Stallions. And then I think it's even worse because Jim Harbaugh just denied everything. And now Sherrone Moore's over here and he's caught with his pants down. I mean, it's only a matter of time. I mean, we all know Jim Harbaugh knew, but he's over here. He wants to deny it. This is just a whole mess. I mean, they shouldn't have their national championship taken away because they cheated throughout the entire season. And everyone just sat there at the NCAA and twiddled their thumbs and did absolutely nothing. And finally, they decided to, it was a 3-game suspension, something like that.
Didn't
even matter at the end of the season, pretty much. I mean, I'm sorry, Ohio State couldn't get the job done because Ryan Day is a sorry coach. But besides that, I mean, Sherrone Moore was in on it too. So what kind of sanctions are you looking at with him? I mean, they say it's a level two violation. I don't even know what comes with that. I'd had to look through it. But the fact that Michigan is just in this much of a mess, Sherrone Moore going to his first year as the actual head coach and not the interim, it says a lot about where the team is right now and where that might be at the end of the season or in a few years. Because if that Jim Harbaugh culture of cheating is still in there, then let's just say the rest of the program is just not going to be corrupted. I mean, if it were me, if I had to go through this and I was AD and say, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to clean house and we're going to get the culture right, because I don't want my university to be associated with cheating and lying and all this deception like Michigan has done for the past year. And even going into next year, I mean, without Connor Stallions on the staff, without any relation to him, the water is already kind of tainted in a sense. I mean, it's already kind of like bitter. You don't want to see, I mean, a lot of people don't want to see Michigan have success. I mean, because they feel cheated out of several games. I think to a point, there's just hatred for Michigan that there probably wasn't already some fan bases. But Sherman Moore has a lot more pressure on him to do well in the situation he was given, without having this insider, whatever Connor Stallions gave him, to really have success in games. And I think that's a big thing for Michigan moving forward.
Yeah, Stallions hasn't cooperated with the NCAA's investigation, but he will break his silence on August 27th on the Netflix documentary Sign Stealer. So we'll get to hear his side of the story and hopefully get a more detailed and sort of correct timeline of what happened and what went on from Netflix, from Connor Stallions appearing on the Central Michigan sideline in Central Michigan gear. They still haven't figured out how he got to that point. Like, who gave him the pass to get on the field? What, like, how do you let a opposing team's head coach get on your sideline? Like, where was the lapse in security? I don't understand at that point at all. And then for Jim Harbaugh, before Connor Stallions was on the staff, he was 49-26. And then after he was on the staff, Stallions was, he was 40-3 and won a national championship. So there's something a little bit fishy there in Jim Harbaugh's record, and the fact he started getting a lot better when the Sign Stealer got on his staff. But that's all I'm saying. I'm not going to accuse Harbaugh of being a part of it, knowing about it, but it's apparent that he got better when it started happening.
Yeah, just no correlation. Don't look at it. Don't look into it. Don't do anything with it. Jim Harbaugh already said he denied it. We got to listen to him. He would never lie. He'd never steal. He'd never cheat. Just remember, his parents taught him that.
Yeah, parents taught him that. Very well. Very well. Now let's move on to the Chris Doering top 10 SEC wide receivers of the last decade.
We need to take a deep breath really quick. It's about to get intense.
At least for you, Nathan, it's going to get really intense.
Oh, I know.
So first, he had Devonta Smith. Right, second, so. Jamar Chase. Three, Amari Cooper. Four, Justin Jefferson. Fifth, A.J. Brown. Sixth, Elijah Moore. Seventh, Jerry Jeudy. Eighth, Malik Nabers. Ninth, Calvin Ridley. And then 10th, Ladd McConkey. Nathan, at what point did I lose you in that list?
I think I got to number four and I just stopped listening. Because I mean, that's just what usually happens with Chris Doering's list. I mean, you get past the first three and you're just like, what is this man talking about?
It's like Charlie Brown, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like the teachers.
I'm going to address my two issues. One of them is at the very top or close to the top. And one of them is at the very bottom of this list. I'm not even going to touch the middle because I don't really care that much. My first issue at the top is Jamar Chase at two and Amari Cooper at three. Okay.
One good season.
And not only that, he quit on the 2020 year. Jamar Chase quit. He saw them get blown out by Mississippi State at home in that first year of 2020. And Jamar Chase said, nope, I'm going to go to the NFL. No more Joe Burrow. No more me. I think there's some recency bias against Amari Cooper here. Yes, Devontae Smith won the Heisman. He needs to be number one. He's first in SEC history when it comes to yards and touchdowns. He had some unbelievable games. He won the national championship in 2020 for Alabama, him and Najee Harris. Amari Cooper was one of the best players I've ever seen play football, especially at the wide receiver position, but just in general. and especially in 2014, but he was his entire career. He was as dominant as you could be. Unbelievable career, still playing unbelievable in the NFL this year for the Browns. I don't see why Amari Cooper's not number two. And then you can put Ja'Marr Chase at three or Justin Jefferson at three, or who cares? But then we get to the end.
Oh,
Lord have mercy.
Ladd McConkey. I genuinely think this guy just wanted to put a Georgia player on there so he didn't seem like, oh my God, wait, Georgia's won, what, two national championships? Why don't they have a wide receiver on here? Oh my God, it's because they have 18 5-stars on their defense every year. Now, Ladd McConkey, back to this issue. I see Jalen Hyatt won the Blitnoff Award. Jalen Waddle and Jameson Williams were two of the best Alabama receivers of all time during their years. Jalen Waddle is the best, second best Auburn player I've ever seen play, or non-Auburn player I've seen play live. Jalen Waddle's performance in the 2019 Iron Bowl sat me down and I just had my mouth wide open. I couldn't say anything. I was like, good grief. Ladd McConkey, in his career, did not even get 15 touchdowns.
Jameson Williams got that in a season.
Jameson Williams. Jalen Hyatt almost had that in two games.
Had that against Alabama almost.
What about a guy like Treylon Burks, who carried
knows all about that
Arkansas team?
And me and Gray were at that one.
No reason that Arkansas team should be in any games when Treylon Burks was out there, but Burks was just a playmaker. He was a playmaker, just like a lot of these guys. I mean, Christian Kirk at Texas A&M, he was a playmaker. That dude was a beast every year. And I was just like, oh my God, when is this guy going to graduate? Every time Auburn played Texas A&M, I was like, why is Kirk out there? Isn't he like 40? Yeah. I could keep going on and on. I can even name other receivers that, you know, probably shouldn't be on this list or shouldn't even be considered for this list, but would be higher than Ladd McConkey. I mean, goodness gracious, I'm going to say it. What about Seth Williams? Mm-hmm. Seth Williams deserves to be higher than Ladd McConkey. Seth Williams doesn't deserve to be on this list. He doesn't deserve to be anywhere close to this list, but neither does Ladd McConkey. He was not that good at Georgia. I don't understand that. I mean, Brock Bowers deserves to be higher than Ladd McConkey on this list.
2021. I'm going to break this down for you. Me and Gray watched Alabama play Arkansas live. I remember I thought it was just going to be a nothing game. We were just hoping to have a good time. Yeah. We didn't think that it was just going to be this back and forth passing attack. We got to see probably three great receivers. Number one, Jameson Williams just outrunning everyone and every single route, Rice Young connecting on that. I don't know. He had three touchdowns in that game. It was insane. John Metchie had 115 yards that game and a touchdown. He was insane. And then not to mention Treylon Burks just catching everything that was thrown his way. I don't even know what happened. It was so annoying, you still got to have, you have to give him credit for what he did. And I don't think he got a lot of credit for what he did during his career at Arkansas. I think he deserves to have some recognition. I don't know if he deserves to be number 10 on this list. I don't think James Williams deserves to be number 10. Although, I mean, in one season, he had Ladd McConkey sacks. Even you can argue it was better. And I really think he should have won Blitnikoff over what? Jordan Addison.
Yeah. At Pitt.
Yeah. I don't even understand that. That was just insane. My argument would probably be Jalen Hyatt. The 2022 season he had, undoubtedly was just insane. He won a Blitnikoff. He was an All-American. He has his hats to back it up. If not him, I think Christian Kirk has a great argument to say, hey, I should be 10th on this list because of what he did throughout his college career. He was very consistent. Basically, just like Mike Evans at Texas A&M, hated them both. You hated to watch him, but like you still have to give him a lot of respect. And then the whole Amari Cooper situation. Dude, I don't even understand. Ja'Marr Chase was a benefit. He just benefited off of the Joe Brady, Joe Burrow offense. That's what he did.
Also had Justin Jefferson on the other side to take away the top corner. People went to Justin Jefferson. Watching that 2019 LSU team, their top corners went to Justin Jefferson. When Auburn played him, Roger McCreary went to Justin Jefferson, not Ja'Marr Chase.
That is exactly right. But for that even to be, I didn't think I was going to have to come here and argue that Amari Cooper was the second best wide receiver in the past decade. But, you know, I guess people just forget what he did. I mean, the number of moments he had, it's so stupid. Chris Doering is just an idiot. He doesn't know how to make a list. Him and his buddy Danny Cannell at SEC Network, two of the biggest clowns I've ever watched on national television.
Danny Clownell?
It just makes it unwatchable. I mean, and I don't get, I think it's just to get me riled up. They just want to create a bunch of controversy so they can, it might not just be me. I hope it's not just me. But they just want to stir up controversy so they can appear more popular, and I guess it's worked, but they just don't know what they're talking about. And lists like this are a reason why they shouldn't be allowed to make lists anymore. I mean, and we didn't even break down the middle of this list, because if we're being honest, AJ Brown at points had a better career than Ja'Marr Chase did. I think he should be higher. Elijah Moore should be higher. Jerry Jeudy should be higher. I mean, Malik Nabers career was better than Justin Jefferson's. I mean, not Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase's career. He should be higher. And so if we're going to base it off one season and rank someone number two, I mean, Jameson Williams in one season had crazy stats. Why is he not higher on this list?
Yeah,
it's just the inconsistencies of Chris Doering.
That's what I was going to point out.
Just put all the Biletnikoff winners up there.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to point out. It feels like there's no consistency on this list. Are we benefiting the player that had the great one season? Are we benefiting the player that played 2 to 3, 4 years at the college? Who are we benefiting here? Like, it's just so inconsistent. Like, there needs to be a set standard of this is the criteria we based on putting Devonta Smith there, Ja'Marr Chase there, Amari Cooper there. But it just feels like he said, he looked at like a list of receivers and went, oh, I remember Ja'Marr Chase having that good game. Let me put him there. Oh, Justin Jefferson, he played in 2020. Or 2019, he looked good, put him there. I mean, it just, there's no consistency in the ranking Chris Doering had. And Jalen Hyatt, easily better than Ladd McConkey. I know it was one season, basically, but it was better than Ladd McConkey's four-year career. I don't get that. Jameson Williams, one good season at Alabama. He probably could have had a lot more yards if he didn't get injured. He could have hit 1,700, 1,800 yards easily. So, for you to put Ladd McConkey at 10 is laughable. I don't like, what were you thinking when you looked at this list and said 10? Who goes at 10? And you looked at your list and you had Ladd McConkey, Jalen Hyatt, Jameson Williams, Treylon Burks, Christian Kirk, and you said Ladd McConkey. Like, what was going through Chris Doering's mind when he picked Ladd McConkey is what I want to know. I want like a in-depth explanation and defense of why Ladd McConkey is ranked over a Biletnikoff Award winner. I really do.
The best receiver on his team. Yeah, I know we're talking about Brock Bowers being a tight end and all, but he was a bona fide receiver. Kyle Pitts might as well be a bona fide receiver as well. I don't know why we didn't argue. I would have been fine if they put tight ends who really were wide receiver on this list. I mean, that would have been fine for me.
Rather Kyle than Pitts putting Kyle Trask look like an NFL quarterback.
Sniff the list. That's what makes me mad. And just the inconsistencies like we talked about. Oh, gosh. And there's just nothing. There's no criteria to go off of. He didn't really break down his list. He just said, here's a bunch of guys I think look cool catching the ball. And that's what he's done with the wide receivers. I believe he put a quarterback list out a while ago. If not, it might have been someone else who was just a clown.
It's probably Danny Cannell.
I don't know. They're pretty much the same person at this point because they made the exact same list that don't make any sense.
Yep.
If y'all had to re-rank this list, just doing a top five, who would be in the top five outside of Devonta Smith being number one? There's no argument there. There's no argument that can be made.
Yeah, just like I said earlier, easy Amari Cooper too. That dude was absolutely phenomenal. You know, I kind of want to put AJ Brown at three. That is a dude that was an absolute monster. And I know he really benefited from a guy like DK Metcalf on the other side of him. You know, SEC defenses were terrified of Metcalf because of his size, but the better receiver was AJ Brown. And he showed it in game after game after game. And so I would go AJ Brown three. I think he had an outstanding career. And then Justin Jefferson four. I think he was better than Ja'Marr Chase. I know Ja'Marr Chase won the Biletnikoff Award, just like I said earlier, because safeties would curl over to Justin Jefferson because of his size, because of his length. You know, who's the better receiver in the NFL right now? Oh, it's Justin Jefferson for a reason. Like, it's really not that difficult to figure that out. But I think in terms of talent, I think AJ Brown and Justin Jefferson are ahead of a guy like Ja'Marr Chase. So Jefferson four, and I really don't even like putting Ja'Marr Chase at five. I mean, I could, because he did win a Biletnikoff. He did have a ton of yards and all that. You can't discredit that. But putting a guy like Elijah Moore, who had an outstanding career and was an All-American, and I think is more, I wouldn't say more talented than Ja'Marr Chase, but I think proved his talent more at Ole Miss, better than the ratio that Ja'Marr Chase did at LSU. Ja'Marr Chase had Joe Burrow throwing him the ball. Who in the world was throwing the ball to Elijah Moore?
Matt Corral.
We see the difference there?
One's in the NFL and one's in the UFL.
I won't tolerate this Matt Corral disrespect.
You also had Matt Luke as a head coach.
This is true. That's where
Joe Brady doing that. And he did Elijah Moore, you know, I just like I mentioned when AJ Brown was at Ole Miss, he had DK Metcalf on the other side. Elijah Moore did not have a DK Metcalf next to him at all. You know, Elijah Moore was the top guy. Another guy, I'm talking about Ole Miss receivers that we didn't even mention here, Laquon Treadwell. That dude was outstanding in terms of just sheer talent. I know he didn't really work out in the NFL because of his leg injury that happened in that Auburn game, but that dude was a beast. He was the next Amari Cooper right after Amari Cooper left. That's who was, you know, that's who we were looking at. I like putting Elijah Moore there over Ja'Marr Chase. I liked him better as a receiver, and you know, I wouldn't take him on my fantasy team right now, but and I would take Ja'Marr Chase, but I like Elijah Moore on this list higher.
Yeah, so Devontae Smith, number one, obviously. I don't think we have to sit here and talk about that anymore. That was Heisman. Just, yeah, he won the first wide receiver Heisman to win a Heisman since Desmond Howard. I mean, that's just, you can't even compete with that. So he's number one, Amari Cooper, number two, just incredible. Three, I would also go A.J. Brown. I think A.J. Brown had a terrific career at Ole Miss. I mean, I don't even have to explain. I mean, Gray break it down perfectly why he should be three. At four, I would probably then go Justin Jefferson. I think just reliving that 2019 season and what he was able to do and how impactful he was on the field, even though he didn't win the Biletnikoff that year, stupid Ja'Marr Chase won it. I think he just was the top receiver on that team, and he made such an impact. And really was one of the main reasons that they were able to win a national championship that year. Mm-hmm. And then at five, I'm not putting Ja'Marr Chase at five. And I think you gave a lot of credit to Elijah Moore. I would too. But I would go with a guy like maybe Jerry Jeudy here, mm-hmm. A Biletnikoff Award winner, an All-American, had great career, almost a 3,000 yard career, 2,000 yard seasons, 26 touchdowns in his career. He made such an impact on Alabama. I know we can break down the entire Alabama wide receiver core in the years he played, because it's fantastic. But for him, I mean, I think that's another argument you can make. He was competing with three other NFL guys at the time to have these type of stats, and that's what he still put up. So I think you got to give him credit there. I think he was one of the best route runners that you've probably ever seen. Yeah. He's definitely got to be up there. So I think I'd have him at five. And then just something else, I would probably be Ja'Marr Chase. I don't want to disrespect him so much, but then again, he deserves a little disrespect because everyone's just always so high on him. Yes. That 2019 season, even though he was good, no one gives Justin Jefferson credit for what he did to allow Ja'Marr Chase to have the type of season he had. And then I think what left a salty taste in my mouth and a lot of people's mouths is the fact that he sat out the 2020 season and just said, basically, I'm not playing. And that should have told you immediately what kind of teammate he was, because a real teammate who was invested in the people around him would have stuck through and played his final season in LSU rather than just sitting out like this is the NFL, because he didn't get what he wants because he's a big baby. Now in the NFL, I'm not going to lie. I took him in a fantasy draft and he burned me. So I'm a little upset about that too.
I do want to say that your point. I do want to say on your point though, Nathan, about Jerry Jeudy, you're talking about how he's competing with the other four Alabama NFL receivers that were there. I also want to say, I was talking about this when I was talking about Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. When teams played against Alabama in that year with Jerry Jeudy and when you had Henry Ruggs and Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith and all them, top corners went to Jerry Jeudy.
Mm-hmm.
Because of how good he was at running routes, at getting open, at being a safety valve for whoever was at quarterback for Alabama, whether it be Tua, Mac, whoever was at quarterback. He changed that whole Alabama receiving core. He's the one that made Jalen Waddle have that unbelievable Iron Bowl in 2019. It's because Roger McCreary was on Jerry Jeudy. And Christian Tutt was on Jalen Waddle. And there's a massive gap there.
Mm-hmm.
So making that point, and he was also still able to be an All-American, to win a Biletnikoff Award in 2018, to have that type of career, then that is very true. That's a great, great credit on that.
Devonta Smith, number one, far and away. Two, Amari Cooper. There's nobody close to Amari Cooper. I'm not sure why Ja'Marr Chase even got put ahead of him on Chris Doering's list, other than the fact Chris Doering's a clown. Three, I'll put Justin Jefferson. I know it was really only one good season, but how dominant he was in that season, y'all both touched on it. He had the top corners on him every game. And the fact to even put up these type of numbers in that one season, 1,500 yards and 18 touchdowns, is a credit to how talented he is and how talented Joe Burrow was at that time and still is in the NFL. So I put him at three. I'll put AJ Brown at four due to how talented he was against other matchups and the consistency he played with over a guy like Ja'Marr Chase, where Ja'Marr Chase had that one very, very good season, but AJ Brown had two exemplary seasons, 1,200 yards and 11 touchdowns in 2017. In 2018, he had 1,300 yards and six touchdowns. So 2,000 yard seasons compared to Ja'Marr Chase's one, and Ja'Marr Chase quit on his team and AJ Brown didn't. And then to wrap up at five, I would put Jerry Jeudy at five, just because how great of a route runner he is, just to repeat what Nathan has said. And he was basically kind of the dad to the Jalen Waddles of the world and the Henry Ruggs and all those guys. He sort of taught them the ways. He was their assistant wide receiver coach, so to speak. He really taught those guys and showed them the ropes at Alabama and really birthed that great wide receiver room. And I think somebody like Malik Nabers, I would arguably have him over a guy like Ja'Marr Chase. I would. Two really good seasons for LSU. And I think he was a lot more dominant in those two seasons at LSU. And I think the consistency that Malik Nabers played with is why I put him over somebody like Ja'Marr Chase. That's really the theme of my list, is consistency. Is did you play really good football for two plus seasons? And I know Justin Jefferson's a little bit of an outlier, but he was just so talented. So, so talented. So I think when I rank my top five, it just comes down to consistency from year to year. And did you prove that you were dominant in those 2 years? And I think the top five I had proved that to me.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that we did not discuss, do you think deserves to have any sort of comment given towards them in this time of having Ladd McConkey at 10 on an SEC wide receiver list?
I think Nathan, you mentioned his name earlier when you were talking about Christian Kirk. Mike Evans is,
yeah.
Mike Evans should definitely be in consideration for this list. That dude was dominant in 2012 and 2013. That's the type of consistency, just like you were saying there, Alex. Consistent, really, really good play, no matter who your quarterback is. I know we had Johnny Manziel. That was kind of a freak quarterback to have, but that dude made Johnny Manziel. Manziel was a great athlete and a great running quarterback. There were times where Johnny Manziel would throw the absolute worst balls and the worst ball placements towards Mike Evans, and Evans would come down with it. And the Mike Evans got famous in 2012 for catching screen passes and taking them to the house. It's a 6'5 athlete just taking a screen pass to the house 60, 70 yards against these SEC teams. He's just more talented than the defensive players. He made Johnny Manziel. He won Johnny Football the Heisman in 2012 and was the only reason he was in contention for a first round pick, which Browns really screwed up in 2013. So I think a guy like Mike Evans is definitely worth mentioning. I don't know if he belongs on the list in terms of numbers and that sort of thing with these guys, but he deserves to be on there.
I think he's just a little outside the decade mark. I think, 2013 is last season with A&M.
So did he play in 2014?
I think it was just...
Or was he drafted in 2013?
I think he was drafted in 2013 and played NFL in 2014. So I think he just missed the list, but obviously I think he would have been way higher given the fact that he gave me nightmares the entire time he played at Texas A&M. Mm. Gosh, I went down this list. I think Brian Thomas Jr. doesn't get enough credit for what he did at LSU. I know the spotlight was on Malik Nabers the entire time, but consistently, Brian Thomas Jr. was that number two guy. He was a real safety valve for Jaden Daniels. Let's be honest, Malik Nabers was just covered by some of the best cornerbacks in the game. So I don't think he gets enough credit. And there are several other guys. I mean, Josh Reynolds, his time at Texas A&M was very, very consistent as well. And I think he deserves credit. I mean, Juwan Jennings. There are several guys on this list that just had fantastic seasons that, unfortunately, they're having to compete with some of the best ever do it. Not in the SEC, but in the nation. So I think... If this list could be a little bit longer, if we have a top 15, then we'll be different. Because I don't want to not give anyone credit, but I mean that's just kind of what has to happen when you have a top.
We're not giving any credit to Ladd McConkey.
No.
He was terrible.
Yeah, I think we made that consistent. But in case you didn't understand, Ladd McConkey should not even have sniffed the top 20.
Well, that's all time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.